talking today about the U.S. situation in a way somewhat parallel to Norman Gisbrecht's talk presently. We asked the question, looking at the trends in alcohol consumption and the trends in acute alcohol problems, there seemed to be some degree of decoupling between them. And it's an area of research interest to us. Just to give you a very brief overview of the trends per capita, and this Dr. Kerr is going to go into more detail on this later and has a longer series, actually. But basically, we see overall a slight increase in overall ethanol intake per capita. It's really coming from increases in spirits and wine, with beer being pretty flat. These are the data sources that I'll be drawing upon. We have a series of national surveys conducted every 5 years, and I'm looking actually at the last three, which is why they're in brighter yellow. So they're each fairly large surveys. The first one was a face-to-face survey, and the next two are telephone surveys, somewhat larger, covering all 50 states. They all include large black and Hispanic oversamples, as well as the most recent ones, small state oversamples. Very briefly, here you see a diagram that, although it's data-based, is sort of designed to kind of illustrate the issues related to concentration of consumption. And basically, the situation is, it's a little unusual. This, going to the left, you have consumers who consume a much larger volume. Consumers on the right consume a very little volume. And this is a cumulative curve, the red curve, showing that actually the top 2.5% of US adults, 18 and over, consume nearly 25 to 28% of the alcohol drunk in this country. It's quite a dramatic finding. When you go to the top 10%, you've literally accounted for 58% of the alcohol. So what we know is that this is the area to which people, to which companies are marketing. We also know something about the demographics of these groups, and that's actually my next slide. One more point that's very important in Bill Kerr's work is the discovery, essentially, that people who are the heaviest consumers are paying the least per drink. Why is this? Could be all kinds of things. We don't know all the reasons, but many of them might be buying in bulk, getting free drinks, getting somebody else to buy for them, in the case of young people particularly. And basically, they can afford to drink more because they're paying less per drink. You can see the difference. Now, looking at these top consumption groups, the top 5% in yellow here, they account for 41% of the volume. They account for 47% of the 5-plus days, 62% of the 8-plus days, and fully 3/4 of the 12-plus days. So that's just in the top 5% of drinkers. So you can see that it's also the area from which we expect, theoretically, a lot of the acute problems to come. So it's not just alcohol-dependent drinkers, but very heavy drinkers, many of whom are young. Perhaps they show up as dependent on a scale, but whether they are dependent in the sense that a late-stage alcoholic is another question. But they definitely consume very large amounts per occasion. So here's the beginning of an analysis that looks at, on the lower end, in the block at the bottom, is several acute problems: drunk driving, legal problems, fights or arguments, and trouble with spouses and partners. And this shows you the trends over time from 1995 through 2005. And the interesting thing is that drunk driving, which started higher, actually dropped rather rapidly and stays lower. Conversely, legal problems stayed kind of even and then dropped in the latter survey. And so the patterns vary slightly here. And up on the top part, are the percentages who have certain heavy episodic drinking, for example, 5+, also 8+ results are given. The maximum, the mean maximum for the group, and also the frequency of drunkenness, at least monthly, for example. And there you see an increase from the first period to the second periods there. So now if we look at, this is the indicators we were using of heavy drinking. So the number of monthly drinks, that is actually a volume measure. So this is the total number of drinks on average in the month, based over the last 12 months, however. 8+ in a year, 5+ monthly, or drunk monthly, and at least monthly, I should say. And you can see that in this, the drunk monthly appears to actually be rising there overall, whereas the other ones aren't changing very much. Now, when you look at the age differential, here you see a fairly big effect. People under 25 and under, rather, versus 26 and older. On each of these indicators, the levels are greater and the rise appears quite dramatic. In other words, a lot of the change is taking place in the young group on these intake measures, the heavy drinking measures. When we look at the problems, you see a somewhat different profile. This is the overall picture. And there you see the drunk driving dropping, as I mentioned. But you also see some level of dropping of the fights and arguments, and maybe even the troubles with partner for those who have a partner. Again, when you look at these problems and break them down into young and old, so these are young adults on the top in the solid lines and people over 26 in the bottom lines. And you can see that for the group that is older, they're actually dropping over the period, whereas for the group that is younger, they seem to have increased over the period. Although I would say that overall, the increase seemed to be in the first period there for those acute problems. However, the rates overall are so much higher. And you can see that it goes from 16% for the fights and arguments, and it drops down to more like 4% for the older group. And that's typical, and of course every other indicator is problematic in the younger group. Sorry, let me go back here. Oops, very sensitive. All right, so what we did was we analyzed this in terms of the contributions of different factors, and here are monthly volume, 5+ monthly, 8+ at all last year, the year of the survey, and the age, whether you were in the younger group, younger adults, or in the 26+ group. And what you see is, for most of these problems, first of all, volume and pattern are clearly highly influential. This is no surprise. They do tend to dominate the effects, but there are effects based on the year of the survey. In several of these, the one that there isn't a change in is legal problems, but the other ones, there clearly is the change that we saw, and it tends to be in the direction of lower problems, actually. So controlling for these other factors, and it also controls, as you can see at the bottom, for gender, ethnic and racial group, education and marital status. Some of the changes, in other words, when you actually adjust these for the demographics, there is actually an improvement in the level of problems for a given level of drinking, if you like. The level of problems is declining with time, which is certainly a positive. There are no interactions between time and age group, which means that there isn't a different effect for the two age groups over this period, which is interesting to me, that you're not seeing a stronger effect, say at a different time for the younger group than you are for the older group. Okay, so quickly a summary of this. I think we clearly need to focus more efforts on the younger group because the levels of problems are clearly and consistently, even with some of the changes going on, consistently above the older age group. There are very strong effects of the drinking pattern, and you can see that we need to focus on these high quantity occasions. There's no question about that. And we might need to focus on even higher levels than we typically think of as the binge drinking at 5+. And clearly, for a number of people, especially the high consumers, these other indicators like 8+, as Genevieve Knupfer said years ago, are very important. And we need to study the effect of measurement on these results, and that's something that we're trying to do in our group. Shifting gears a bit, I'd want to give you a little perspective around the ethnic minority issues, because that is a focus of our center. Here we have DSM-IV dependence, and you would see a somewhat similar but mildly different view for acute problems. But I wanted to show you that the life course for the different ethnic groups can be quite different. So in particular, when we look at the Hispanics and also African Americans, particularly strongly in the African American group, you've got a much higher level of problems, relatively speaking, in the 30 to 49 group compared to the 18 to 29 group. In other words, later onset of drinking, and then essentially a higher level of problems. And I think this is something that's being talked about quite a lot, but I don't think we fully yet understand what all the issues are involving these life course differences. Some are probably protective effects earlier, but that they break down at a later point. And very different patterns. But you can see that for young Hispanics, there's a very strong spike there. So some very different profiles. So we need to be sensitive to the fact that these population levels are quite different in different ethnic groups. Just to give you a clarity about the extent of some of the differences here, you can see that this one is just looking at 8+ drinking, which is, of course, quite heavy drinking. And you can see that among American Indians, it's very high. And this has been documented in many American Indian groups. Cindy Erler's work, for example, with Mission Indians in Southern California bears this out. And black Hispanic group in this particular case, and others, which is a heterogeneous group, but it's certainly elevated here, and Asians being low. But you see a somewhat different pattern when you look at the acute problems. Here you can see that although the American Indians certainly have these same acute problems that we were talking about before, it's really striking that the black Hispanics do not report them. So is this a reporting artifact, or is it something that is different in those groups? And we don't know yet enough about this, but we have some ideas. One issue that's very striking in these different ethnic groups is that there are different patterns of drinking at different contexts. And this is some recent work that's coming out in JSAD that involves one of our postdocs. And I point out that the most striking thing, it's a little hard to read the key here, but there are three preference groups in terms of where they do their drinking. And the preference group that likes to drink mostly in bars tends to drink everywhere else as well. The preference group that likes to drink at home more drinks quite a bit elsewhere. And the preference group that's called the light group, which was found by cluster analysis, does not drink at home and drinks a bit elsewhere. But they actually don't drink at all practically at home. The interesting thing, too, that if you look at the African-American group here, you see that the public drinking is much higher in all of these groups. If you compare it with the top level, which is the white group, in all cases, the public drinking in parks, on street corners, is much greater. And that exposes you to certain kinds of environmental problems that you might not have if you're drinking, quote, in the security of your home. So these are factors to pay attention to, too. Here, I'll be wrapping up shortly, Clearly, we have another series of studies that are looking at things like poverty, unfair treatment, stigma, and a combined disadvantaged score. And what you see is that there is very strong association with these consequences related to poverty and related to disadvantage and perceived disadvantage. So I think this is going to be an area that helps look at what some of these ethnic differences might be about. So I want to say that, you know, we've clearly got very different profiles for African Americans in particular, and also Hispanics. We know from Dr. Kerr's work that black men may consume more ethanol per drink. So their reporting is a certain number of drinks, and it looks like they're having an excess of problems for those drinks. But in fact, the drinks may be 1.5 times the size of drinks from the other groups. And we have done some studies recently in bars, which seems to bear out that actually even in African-American bars, larger drink size are poured. So it's something to be aware of, is that there's an environmental factor and a kind of preference factor that may be driving some of these excess problems. There are also differences in treatment and treatment accessibility, some of the barriers to treatment, and we see the social disadvantage as being a major factor. So I think we're beginning to tease apart what some of these differences and disparities may be about. Not to forget that there are also these externalities. This looks at the kinds of problems that are inflicted on other people, not the drinker themselves. And we see that there are quite high levels. And this is an area that I think is going to become a more important study. And lastly, just to finish up on the policy implications, I would say sadly, in the 15-year period we've been looking at alcohol policies, we actually see an erosion in the public support for most of these alcohol policies. This is a disturbing aspect. Now, you will have seen on the slide that Norman showed related to the Baber et al. Tom is in the back of the room, I see, book on No Ordinary Commodity, that warning labels has widespread public support. It doesn't, after all, prevent you drinking. But we do see people who say that it influences their drinking before driving and driving when you've, in other words, doing something else. And most recently, we found actually that the warning label seems to affect people intervening with another person to prevent them drunk driving. So there are some indicators that some behavioral things of relevance are happening from warning labels. And warning labels is the most supported now public program in the United States. It also enables us to do more public health things. But we have our work cut out for us to get across the message to the public that these things are important, because clearly there's an erosion. And that's what I want to leave you with there. So I think we really need to redouble our efforts to bring our messages to the public. I think it's clear that since maybe some time in the sort of time when the drinking was lowering in the country from the 1980s, at that time there was quite a bit of public support. We now see the beginning maybe of a long wave in which it's an uptick. People are drinking more, and yet people are also not so aware of the value of alcohol controls. So I think that's where we are going to have to do quite a bit of work. Thank you.